Now we're holding in Nedarim, page 136, Ois Membeis. We learned yesterday about the story of Reb Tarfon and the figs, and how the guy thought that Reb Tarfon was stealing his figs, and previously had stolen his grapes, and Reb Tarfon makes it known to him that he is, in fact, Reb Tarfon, the Talmud Chacham, and therefore the guy dropped him and ran away, and then left him alone, and Reb Tarfon, for the rest of his life, felt bad about it, that he had used the honor of his Torah to save himself, whereas we said he was rich. He could have afforded to just pay the guy for all the grapes, for all the grapes and all the figs and everything, no doubt. So therefore he felt bad that he had done that, and we talked about also a point that the Rif makes based on the Ran over here, that the guy actually still suspected Reb Tarfon of taking it. He just left him alone because of respect for a Talmud Chacham, and that itself makes a Chilul Hashem, because then it means the person is going to think for the rest of his life that Talmud Chacham are in fact thieves. So now continuing on that topic of getting honor from Torah, and how you're not supposed to do that, and the various exceptions when you can. Incidentally, by the way, you know, it occurs to me, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that Reb Tarfon was very, very tall. So if we're saying this guy was able to stuff Reb Tarfon into a sack and then pick him up and threaten to throw him in the river, we got to understand this guy must have been quite the big bovan as well, you know. Anyway, so Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. The pasuk says, "La'avor as Hashem alekecha," to love Hashem your God, "lishmoya b'kole," to listen to His voice, or "ladov kavoy," and to connect to Him. So, what does that mean? In other words, it means that a person has to learn Torah and do mitzvahs because of love of Hashem rather than any other reason. Shelo yom na'adam, a person should not say, "Ekra, I'm going to learn Tanakh, shi'kru'uni chacham." So that way people will call me a chacham, that way people will call me a wise person. Eshnei is going to think to himself, I will learn Mishnayos, shikru'uni Rebbe, so people will call me Rebbe. Eshne, or I'm going to learn Mishnayos, and then Gemara, and whatever, she'eyah zokin, the eshev v'yeshiva, so that I'll be considered an elder Talmud Chacham who sits in the yeshiva. So in other words, a person might, now, there is the concept, the Gemara mentions in other places, that a person should always learn Torah and do mitzvahs, even shaloi l'shma, because mitoch shaloi b'l'shma, from eventually he starts by doing it for the wrong motives, eventually he'll come to do it for the right motives, but nevertheless, in other words, the point is that a person can't live his whole life that way. Eventually, a person has to reach that point of doing it l'shma, so here we're saying that, So he was saying a person, he can start out that way, but eventually he has to graduate from that and come to do Lashma. The Rambam also describes at the end of Hilchos Teshuva, the Rambam describes this idea. You have, for example, you start by teaching children, you start by teaching Amei Oretz or whatever. Yeah, you start by teaching them the concept that they should learn Torah for ulterior motives. For a kid, you tell them you're going to give them candies. When the kid's older, the Rambam actually mentions this in a little more detail in Pidush HaMishnayos. The kid's little, you give them candies. The kid's a little older, you give them a pat on the head. You give them, you know, different things like that. Eventually you get to the point where the rewards are less and less tangible, and eventually you teach him, that Rambam calls it in Hilchos Yesod, in Hilchos Teshuva, that Rambam calls it a great secret, that you teach him the concept of learning, the concept of learning and doing Lashma. So that's ultimately a person has to reach that point. So the Braisa is saying, learn Torah out of love for Hashem. And the kavod will eventually come. There will be kavod, but you don't have to work towards it. It'll come on its own. Even Yaakov points out over here that, when you get down to it, he says that, Eitz Yosef rather points out, you know, really you have two different kinds of kavod. You have the kind of kavod that other people give him, and then you have the real kavod, which is where the person himself, he's made his neshama greater and brought himself to a higher level. So when we say over here, a sofa covered lover, we don't necessarily mean the covered that other people are going to give him. That's not necessarily a true kind of covered. We mean the real covered, the fact that he's now made his neshama greater and closer to Hashem. So Shanema is the Pasuk, so where do we see in the Pasuk that you should be learning Torah Lishma and not for any other motive? Shanema, the Pasuk says, Koshrem alat zvoisecha, tie the words of Torah on your fingers. Koshrem aluach libecha, write them on the tablet of your heart. So the Ran says, in other words, what that means is, when it says tie them on your fingers, the only purpose for which you should be learning Torah is only in order that they should be shigurin b'ficha, so you should be fluent in them, not for any of the other reasons that we said before about kavod and wealth and so on and so forth. V'omer, and another pasuk says, "Koshrim al libcha tamid." So tie them on your. So the Ran explains, in other words, again, tie it on your fingers means you're learning Torah solely for the purpose that you'll know it thoroughly, that you'll know it off the bat, or off the top of your head. On the other hand, Maharsha explains a little differently. What it means is koshen alat boisecha means tie your learning Torah to what you do with your fingers. Your Torah should not just be for the sake of learning Torah alone. It should be in order to know how to do mitzvahs. So that's etz boisecha. You do many mitzvahs with your fingers. V'omer, and another pasuk says, koshren al libcha tamid, tie them constantly on your heart, onde malgagere secha. Make them like a necklace around your neck. Which is, again, the idea, in other words, that you're not doing it for covered or anything like that. You're doing it just so that it should be something that it should not be for your hana. It should be solely in order to know the Torah as best as possible and to remember it and Maharsha also adds to do it as much as possible. Eitz Yosef also brings something from the Vilna Gaon in this connection, that the vort is, in other words, like you have, you know, you're tying, it's like, you know, you tie a string around your finger to remember something. So the same way over here, it means, in other words, you tie the words of Torah to your fingers, again, similar to what Maharsha says about the Maisa Mitzvahs, and write it on the tablet of your heart, meaning, in other words, that make sure you're not going to forget it. So that shows that you're learning Torah in order for the Shema, in order not to, so that you don't forget it, and so you're constantly able to connect with the Eibishter through it. V'omer, and another pasuk says, Yorcheha Dachei Noyam V'gomer, another pasuk says, the ways of Torah are ways of peace. So we see, in other words, that Sofa covered Lover, that there will be pleasantness, the Torah's ways are ways of pleasantness. In other words, eventually, as he said, there will be covered, there will be rewards in this world as well for learning Torah, because its ways are ways of pleasantness. So that's but nevertheless, that's not your primary motivation for learning Torah. And va'omer, and you have another pasuk, Eitz Chayim Hi L'Machzikim Ba, the Torah is a tree of life for those who hold strongly onto it, which again, Maharsha says, Machzikim Ba also means to hold onto it strongly as far as doing it. V'Semcheha, and those who uphold it, Ma'usher, are very fortunate. So it means, in other words, so Eitz Yosef brings, again, from the Vilna Gaon, it means like this. First of all, Drachecha and Nesivoseha, Dachar Nachanem, Vachon Nesivoseha Shalem, Derech means a broad path. Nesiv means a narrower path. So in other words, there you have, first you have the broader path of learning, where it's impossible to go the wrong way, so that means the people who are learning Lashma, and then Vachon Nesivoseha is the people who are not learning so much Lashma, they're going like on the side paths, and they may easily go astray, nevertheless, they still have Vachon Nesivoseha Shalem, they still have Shalem from it. Because ultimately, even a person learns Torah, Shaloi Lashma, eventually it brings him Lashma. As far as the Eitz Chaim, the Machzikim Ba, the Semcher Ma'usher, so the Machzikim Ba means he holds onto it with his hands, and the Semcher Ma'usher means he stands there firmly with his feet. So whether he's learning and being Mekayim Torah himself, or whether he's Temcheha, whether he's those, one of the ones who supports Torah by being, for example, like Zvulun to Yisachar, either way they have the greatness and the advantage of Torah. So the Gemara continues, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik Omer, Asei Dvarim L'Poyalam, or L'Shem Poyalam. You should do the matters of Torah for, L'Poyalam means for the one who, for the ones who is Poyal, for the one who is Poyal, for Hashem, who brought them about and commanded on them. Maharsha says L'Poyalam, or L'Shem Poyalam, is the Girsa in the printed Gemara, means for the sake of their doing. And here Maharsha says that, again, that means that a person shouldn't just be learning Torah for the sake of learning, but more for the sake of doing mitzvahs. So that's L'Shem Poyalam, for the sake of the deeds, of the actions of mitzvahs. V'daba behem l'shmam, and speak of words of Torah l'shmam, that it should be purely l'shem shemayim. And he continues, which this we have Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik saying in Pirkei Avos, al tasim at Torah l'sgadol behem, don't make the Torah a crown to become greater with it, that you're going to say, I have the crown of Torah, and therefore people are going to respect me, and they're going to call me Rebbe, and so forth. That's not the purpose of learning Torah. And also don't make them a spade, a shovel to dig with it, which would mean, in other words, a source of parnasa. The Rambam in this connection, when the Gemara, when Pirkei Avos brings this, the Rambam explains in Pirush HaMishnayos over there, and then says very strongly against the idea of taking money for learning Torah. Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about that a person is not allowed to charge money for teaching Torah Shabbal Peh, but based on this, also, and other relevant Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, the Rambam says very strongly that a person is not supposed to be using Torah for any kind of monetary gain. So that would mean, in other words, not even, for example, the Rambam may be against the whole idea of a kollel, for example. I mean, that's what a kollel is when you get down to it, is that people are learning full-time and they get a stipend. On the other hand, different other Rishonim and Achronim after that, the Rivosh talks about this, the Beis Yosef talks about this in Kesef Mishnah, and he says, practically speaking, in principle, yeah, you know, the Rambam has a point. On the other hand, the fact is, the way things are over the centuries of Golos, if we didn't support Tamar Chachamim, and the only ones who are actually able to, after all, a person needs a parnasa somehow, so then there would be very few people, if any, who would actually be able to learn Torah full time, and Torah Chas V'Shalom, the Torah might be forgotten. So therefore, the Rivosh and the Kesef Mishnah and others talk about that there is justification against the Rambam that there should be the idea that a person can, to a certain extent, use Torah as a source of parnasa, and this is the whole concept behind kollelim, where they do exactly that. Practically speaking, your average kollel, yungaman, your average kollel family doesn't make ends meet only from the kollel stipend. Anyhow, the wife, for example, works and brings in an income as well, and she gets a tremendous schar for that as well. But anyway, okay. So Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik continues with kavachomer, and again, you can do a kavachomer. Before we get to the Kalachoyim, actually, Marashah points out an interesting point. That there are two, altogether then, Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik has said four things about learning Torah. Two positives, two things that you should do. Do them l'shem polam and speak of them, or l'poilam and speak of them l'shmam. And two negative, don't make them into a crown and don't make them into a shovel to become important and great, and don't make it into a shovel to dig, meaning a source of parnasa. Marsha points out an interesting thing. There are four letters of the Aleph Beis that the name of the letter contains the letter Lamed in it. Lamed is in the word Limud, so learning. So there's four letters, and they spell out the word Egdal, I will become greater, where there's four letters that have an Aleph in them, that have a Lamed in them. So the Aleph, the letter Aleph is Malashan Aleph, a leader. So this is the person who learns with the motivation that they're going to call me Rebbe, they're going to call me leader. The Gimel is Meloshin Goymel, Meloshin getting a reward. So this is a person who's learning in order because he wants the Schar in Olam Haba. The Dalid is also Meloshin Dal, poor. So this means a person who's learning Torah in order to use it as a source of Parnasa. So those three, Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik saying is not the right way. The Lamed, the letter Lamed itself, has of course a Lamed in its name. That represents the learning purely for the sake of learning, purely for love of Hashem. So that's why he mentions these. That's why he mentions these four things. Also Maharsha explains that it also means, furthermore, that you start by doing l'shem pol. It's a progression over here. You start by doing things l'shem polam for the sake of the schar that you're going to get for doing the mitzvahs. After that, eventually you'll come to a higher level, speaking of them l'shmam, which is a higher advantage. Similarly, Loisa says, don't start by making them a crown, and even worse, don't make it into a spade. And he continues, so now going back to the Gemara of a Kavachomer, and Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik says you can make a Kavachomer to show that this is the case. As we learned yesterday, this Kavachomer, Umab Belshazzar, Shalinishtamash Elab Klei Kodesh Shanasu Klei Choyl, as we learned about yesterday, Belshazzar, the grandson of Nochanetzer, made a party when he thought the 70 years of Golus Bava were up. He made a party, he was the Kalim of the Bismikdash, and technically those Kalim at that point were not Kodesh anymore, as we talked about yesterday, based on the Pasuk, Uvoba Peritzin Bechilalua, once the Goyim invaded the Bismikdash and took it over, then the Kalim technically became Choyl. Nevertheless, Nechum in Olam, nevertheless, he was uprooted from the world, and he was killed, and his whole empire was overthrown for using these Kalim inappropriately. Therefore, says Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik, HaMashtamash B'Kis Yerushal Torah, Alachas Kama Kama, how much more so a person misuses the crown of Torah to bring advantages for himself, than how much more so that he deserves to be Nechum in Olam. And again, that brings us back to what Reb Taufin did, where therefore he felt bad about that he had done that. Now, however, Omar Rabbah, however, Rabbah says there are some exceptions to this. First of all, shari le le'inish lo'i du'i nafshe va'asra de la yadin le. In a place where they don't know who he is, a person is allowed to make himself known and make people aware that he is a Talmud Chacham. Dichtiv, as we find the pasuk, where Evadia says to Eliyahu Hanavi, "V'avdecha yoreis Hashem min ura." You have the story over there. It's an after it's an after of Parshas Kisisa. So Achav and Evadia are going and looking. There's a famine going on. They're looking for any grass to feed the animals. As Evadia is going going to look, he meets up with Eliyahu. Eliyahu tells him, "Go tell Achav, I want to see him." This is where there's going to be the whole thing, the whole showdown at Har HaKarmel. So Evadia tells Eliyahu, I'm afraid that if I go and tell Achav you want to see him, meanwhile you're going to disappear and I'm going to be in trouble. And don't you realize, says Evadia, v'avdecha yoreis Hashem min urai, your servant, meaning I, fear Hashem from when I was young. So in other words, therefore, so don't endanger my life by telling me to go to Achav with a message where there you're going to disappear and I'm going to be in trouble. The point being, in other words, that so the Ran says we can assume that Eliyahu did not know Evadia personally, so he didn't know that he was a Yoreis Hashem, and therefore Evadia is entitled to point that out, to point that fact out to Eliyahu. Marsha mentions that, in the previous psukim before that, Evadia tells Eliyahu, haven't you heard, hasn't my master heard about what I did in saving 100 Nevi'im and putting them in caves, etc., etc. Nevertheless, based on what the Ran is saying, it could be. So Eliyahu knew of Evadia by reputation. He had heard about him, but he had never met him personally, and therefore he didn't know him well enough to know that he's a Yoreis Hashem, and therefore Evadia is entitled to tell him. So we see a person is allowed to take that kind of credit for himself. To give himself this kind of credit to say I am a Yorei Hashem or I'm a Talmud Chacham, that kind of thing. So the question is then, Elakasha did Reb Tirfin. Well, then we're back to the question about what did Reb Tirfin do wrong? Why does he feel bad about that he said to the guy who had him in the sack, Oylozesh, a Tirfin Hergoy, if he informed him that he's Reb Tirfin, the Talmud Chacham, then what's wrong? The guy obviously didn't know that this is Reb Tirfin, and based on what Robert just said, he should have been allowed to. And again, the answer is, like we said before, Mishum de Oshu, Godol Hava, because Reb Tirfin was very rich, he could have paid him off with money, he could have told him, yes, I understand you had grapes stolen from you all season, and that's why you're so resentful, fine, I'll pay you for all those grapes. He could have afforded it. As we talked about yesterday, the Ran says, it's one thing if it was just that the guy was angry about the figs, then Reb Tirfin could have told him, look, it is after the fig harvesting season. These figs are hefker at this point. And fine, if you don't want to accept that and you claim that these figs are not hefker, then fine, I'll pay you a few dollars for the figs that I ate. The Gemara had assumed, to begin with, though, that why should Reb Tirfin be on the hook for all the grapes that were stolen from the guy all summer when he had nothing to do with that? And the answer is, nevertheless, he should have done that. He should have offered the guy money to pay him for the grapes as well. And that way he would have saved himself rather than... Rather than tell the person I am Reb Tirfin, or whatever the wording he used, Oylozesha Tirfin Hergoy, Oylozesha Tirfin, Shazza Hergoy, where there he used the power of his Torah, the covenant of his Torah. Yeah, by the way, as far as the Evadia we're talking about, yes, this is the same Evadia who's from Tirei Yosser, so yeah, he appears in Malachim, he was Akov's chief of staff. The Gemara, by the way, points out an interesting thing in Sanhedrin, that Evadia, it says over there, was a ger from Edom, and his single nevuah, his is the shortest book of Tanakh, it's only one chapter, 21 psukim, and it's all a nevuah about Edom, about how Edom is going to be destroyed. So the Gemara points out one reason that's why that's very appropriate is Evadia was a tzaddik who lived among two Rishoyim, who lived in the palace together with, or at least he worked in the palace, whatever, together with Achav and Izevel, and he remained a tzaddik. Meanwhile, you have Esav lived in the same house with Yitzchak and Rivka and never learned from them and remained a Rasha. Therefore, it's very appropriate that Evadia says his nevuah against Edom. Anyway, yeah, it is the same. It is the same Evadia from Tirei Yosser. So the Gemara points out in this connection also, Rava pointed out a seeming contradiction between the psukim. Here we're saying that Evadia says that I fear Hashem since I was young. So in other words, it sounds almost like he's boasting about himself, about what he's accomplishing in Yiddishkeit. But on the other hand, you have a pasuk, Yahalocha Zor V'Leificha. Only strangers should praise you, not yourself. Don't go taking credit for yourself. So why is Evadia doing it? And the answer is, like before, Hoba Asra de Yadinle, Hoba Asra de Yadinle. It depends whether it's a place where they know him or not. In the case of Evadia, as the Ran said, Eliyahu apparently didn't know him personally. He may have known of him by reputation, as Marashah says, but he didn't know him personally, and therefore Evadia is entitled to say this. As opposed to in a place where they do know him, then he shouldn't be praising himself. In fact, Marashah says that's the pasuk goes, Yahalo Chazor, a stranger should praise you, Veloy Ficha, not your mouth, meaning, in other words, where they know you. Because if they don't know you, they can't very well be Yahalo Chazor. How would they praise you if they don't know who you are? So evidently, we see clearly from the wording of the pasuk that one is talking about where they do know him. And in that case, then he shouldn't be boasting and taking credit for himself, but rather he should leave it if there's going to be praise, let it come from them. So the Gemara continues, V'omar Rava. So now again, we're going to talk about some exceptions where a Talmud Chacham is entitled to use the fact that he's a Talmud Chacham to get certain privileges. The Ran explains basically all these things that we're going to discuss over here in the Gemara. These are things. The Torah is mezakeh to Talmud Chachamim. The same way as the Torah grants to Kohenim and Levim the right to Trumas and Maisris, the same way the Torah grants certain privileges to Talmud Chachamim, and therefore if they don't know that he's a Talmud Chacham and entitled to it, then he's entitled to speak up and ask for that privilege. So the first one, Rava says, Shari leilat suvim in abonon lememar, a Talmud Chacham is allowed to say, suvim in abonon, actually, strictly speaking, means a young Talmud Chacham. Suvim, Rashi elsewhere mentions, comes from a word in Aramaic that means singed, like burnt a little bit. Talmud Chacham, now compared to fire, like you have in Pirkei Avos, have a zorib gachalosim, be careful around their coals, shalot yikava, that you don't get burnt. So therefore, Talmud Chacham, a young Talmud Chacham who spends time with older Talmud Chachamim and gets influenced by them, is called a suvim in abonon, literally like he's been singed by the Chachamim. Anyway, so he's allowed to say, so in other words, Pashtus, the idea is if he's an old Talmud Chacham, then everybody knows him already, but when he's a young Talmud Chacham, people don't know of him yet. So he's allowed to say, I am a Talmud Chacham, truly Tigroi Beresha. Therefore, take care of my Din Torah first. Meaning, in other words, you can have, normally when Beis Din has, they have a docket, they have a list of Dinei Torah that they have to deal with, and usually the rule is first come, first serve. However, the Gemara mentions here and in other places there are certain exceptions to that. One of them being that there's an exception for Talmud Chacham that his Din Torah comes ahead of other people. So one point is, so now there's two major reasons that the Mefarshim give, why should that be so? Why is the Talmud Chacham granted that privilege of jumping the line? One, the Mefarsh says over here, because of covered for his Torah. The Rosh gives a different reason, in order not to waste time from his learning. This way he can get back to his learning as soon as possible. So Marshall points out it can really be both. You know, we had a story in Masechet Ksubos a few weeks ago. We had a story involving Rav Onan where there was a person who had come to him for a Din Torah, and Rav Onan recused himself on the basis that the person had done a favor for him, and therefore it would seem like the guy wanted to give him a gift, and therefore it would be a degree of sheichad. So instead he sent him to Rav Nachman and says, I'm possible to judge him, and Rav Nachman mistakenly thought that the guy is a relative of Rav Onan and decided that therefore he gets to jump the line. Now, that's not a matter of that he shouldn't waste his time, because we're not saying the person himself is a Talmud Chacham. So Marashah points out it's really both. Where we know him, where we know that he's a Talmud Chacham, then he or his relatives, then you give kavod because of the Torah. Here we're talking about where we don't know him, and he needs to tell them that he himself is a Talmud Chacham, so then you can't really say kavod of Torah, because we don't know whether that's true or not. Nevertheless, though, there is the fact of bittul Torah, there is the fact if what he's saying is true, then it's wasting time from his learning to be sitting there in the Beis Din Shtivl, and therefore you should let him go first. I don't know if that applies. First of all, it does mention in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Talmud Torah for many purposes in Halacha. We say we don't have Talmud Chachamim of that caliber anymore that are entitled to some of these dispensations. Aside from that, also, would it apply nowadays where the Talmud Chacham could very well take out his phone and learn Torah with it while he's sitting there? I don't know. Okay. So where do we see that the Talmud Chacham is given this privilege? Dichtiv uvnei David koyanim hoyu. The pasuk says that David's sons were koyanim. Now what do you mean? Koyanim hoyu? They weren't actually koyanim. Koyanim are from Shevet Levi. David and his sons are from Shevet Yehuda. Ella ma koyan noto chelik barosh. What it comes to teach us, in other words, they were tamer chachamim. And now Mefarshim on the pasuk explains that koyanim can mean ministers. They were ministers in his government. I'll derech, like for example, some of the Mefarshim say when it says Yisrael koyan Midian, that it doesn't mean the priest of Midian, as we always learn as kids, but rather some of the Mefarshim explain it means the minister of Midian. So you also of Nedavid koyanim, how you would mean that they were important officials in his government. But here the Gemara is taking it. And the difference is that Karinim are Karinim and ministers are ministers.
What's the difference between priests and ministers?
Oh, priests are people who serve in the Bais HaMikdash, and ministers are people who serve in the government.
Cool.
Yeah, so, very good. Okay, so, yeah, so David's sons then were saying were Koyanim in the sense, what do we mean? They're not literally Koyanim, but they're Tamar Chachamim, and we're saying Tamar Chachamim are compared to Koyanim. Ela ma Koyan noito chelek barosh, just like a Koyan gets the first portion, as we're going to explain in a second, af tamid chacham, lo tochelik barosh, the same way the tamid chacham is entitled to the first portion, and that means in particular, again, when we're talking about the line of people waiting for dinei torah, then he's entitled to skip ahead in the line. Well, the koyin minolon, and true, and where do we know this concept? By a koyin himself. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, v'kidashtoi, you should make the koyin holy, ki eslechem alekechahu makri v'gomer, because he's offering the bread, meaning the food of Hashem on the Mizbeach. And what does this mitzvah, v'kidashtoi, consist of? V'tonet ve'rabi shmol, we learn in a braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmol, v'kidashtoi means the whole davar shebe kedusha. As far as any matter of kedusha, always let the koyin go first. Liftoyach rishon, it means he should be the first one to speak. So the Ran explains it means, when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, he gets the first aliyah. Other Mephoshim explain it also means, for example, when you have speakers by a conference or whatever, then you should give the Koyan to speak first. And incidentally, in this connection, you know, you have as far as a Koyan getting the first aliyah, really, in principle, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, in Gittin in particular, we'll get to it in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, that really a great Talmud Chacham should go ahead of a Koyan. A Koyan who's an Am HaOretz shouldn't really be getting the first aliyah. The Rambam, in fact, in Pirush HaMishnayos, speaks very strongly about that and says people who do otherwise, people who always give the Koyan the first aliyah, even if he's an Am HaOretz, are degrading the Torah. On the other hand, it seems by the time that Amram wrote Yad HaChazaka, he kind of changed his mind and went along with it. The fact is, the Minhag HaOlam is to always give the Koyan first, and that Amram makes his peace with it and says in Hilchos Tefillah that, look, this is the way the Minhag Poshut is to do that, and therefore, fine, that's how it is. Anyway. So the Ftoyach Rishon, or the Vorech Rishon, to make the Bracha first, which would mean Birkas HaMazon, that if you have somebody who has to leave Birkas HaMazon, preferably you should give it to the Koyan. The Meforish, printed under Rashi's name, explains that it also means to have him be the one to say Hamotzi first. The little Mona Yoferishin, and to take a good portion first. If a Yisrael or a Koyan are going to be dividing something up between them, then the Yisrael should, for example, do the division, and the Koyan gets the first pick of it. That's according to the Ran. The Meforish gives a different explanation. It means also that within the Kohenim themselves, for example, that the Kohen Gadol gets first dibs on the Lechem Aponim, or rather a Kohen who is a Tamad Chacham gets first choice of his portion of the Lechem Aponim. Okay, so the point is, in other words, the same way as a Tamid Chacham gets first dibs on all these kinds of things, the same way so does a Tamid Chacham, and we learn that from the pasuk that calls David's sons Koyanim. The Gemara continues, V'omar Rava, Shori Leilat Suvim and Abonon Lameimah. Here's another thing that a young Tamid Chacham is allowed to say. Lo Yehivna Akarga. I'm not going to pay the head tax. Now you have, just like nowadays, there are different kinds of taxes. You have income taxes and sales taxes and whatnot. A karga is the type, is something in English is called a head tax, meaning just for the fact that you're living in the country, for that alone you're paying a tax. So a Talmud Chacham is entitled to say that I'm a Talmud Chacham, and therefore I'm exempt from paying that tax. Dichtiv. And not just
Blagging a little bit.
But that's the point. He's allowed to because the Torah grants him that right to be exempt from that tax. Actually, not only the Karga, as the Gemara is going to go point out over here, there are several kinds of taxes from which Tamar HaChamim are to be exempt. The main place where the Gemara talks about this is in Baba Basra, but here it's just mentioning it briefly. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, The Pasuk in Ezra is referring to the people who were coming to build the second Beis HaMikdash, and in particular among them, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and the Pasuk says, Minda Bloy V'Haloch V'Gomer, that they're not to be the Daryavish, Kodesh first, later on Daryavish, repeats the order, they're not to be charged the taxes of Minda Bloy and Haloch. So what are those taxes? The Amr of Yehuda, Minda Zumenos HaMelech. The Minda refers to what's to Menos HaMelech, the percentage of the percentage of the crops or whatever that's supposed to go to the king. So again, they're busy with Melechas Shemayim. They're busy building the Beis HaMikdash. And among them were Talmid HaChachamim. Among them were the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. So therefore, so we see that the king ratified and said that no, that you're not allowed to charge them these taxes. So Minda Zumenos HaMelech. This is the percentage of the percentage, for example, like, Yosef refers to that it means that brings from Iran actually, that it means land taxes, real estate taxes. Bloy zukesef gugolta. Bloy is what is the head tax, so what we just called akarga. The haloch ze arnoina. And what is haloch is the tax that in the times of the Gemara was called arnoina.
So did it say
akarga earlier and then? So akarga was the name for it in later times, and the pasuk called it bloy. So the haloch zu arnoina refers to arnoina taxes. What is arnoina? The Ran gives two explanations. One is when the king travels from place to place, people are expected to provide food for him. So that kind of thing is called arnoina in Greek, and therefore that's what that tax means.
It's called arnoina.
And so in modern Hebrew, arnoina is a certain type of tax. Yeah, exactly. So they get it from this. The Ran gives a second explanation that arnoina is that the king is entitled to a certain percentage of the animals. We find like this: the Arnon River, we have in the pasuk Ki Arnon Gvul Moav, that the Arnon River was the border between Moav and the Amorim, and later on when the Jews conquered the lands of the Amorim, then it became the border between Moav and the lands of Reuben and Gad. So therefore, so in other words, the word Arnon or Arnona refers to a partnership. So in effect, since the king is entitled to a certain percentage of the animals, then it's as if like he has a partnership with it, and therefore that kind of thing is called Arnona. What?
It's a river?
So no, the Arnon is a river, it's a river in Eivor HaYarden, but therefore the Ran's second explanation is they came to use the word Arnona to mean a partnership, and in this case specifically the tax, which is in effect the king is a partner in your flock of animals and he's entitled to a certain percentage. No, we're talking about the domestic animals, cows, sheep, that kind of thing. No, not necessarily firstborn. Or anything. That's true. Anyway, the point is that we see from that pasuk that Kodesh and later on Daryavish are saying that the people who are building the Beis HaMikdash and the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, who are learning and teaching Torah to the people, are not to be charged these types of taxes. So therefore, by that logic, throughout the generations, a Talmid Chacham and a young Talmid Chacham is entitled to introduce himself as a Talmid Chacham, and therefore that he's potter from these taxes, because again, that's a right that the Torah grants him. So, okay. But Omar Rava, then Rava says, here's another thing. Shorty with Suvim in Abonim Neymar, a young Talmud Chacham is allowed to say, Avda Denura Ana. I am a servant of the fire. Now, in those times in Persia, and the Persian Empire also included Babel, they had their religion.
Fire mean.
Hold on. The Persian religion of that time had, among other things, they worshipped fire. They would have fires in their temples, and they would worship the fire as a symbol of Hashem or whatever it is. So now a person is entitled to say, now the point is, the priests who worked in those temples, who ran the religion for them, were potter from taxes, the same way as in a similar way nowadays. Churches and lahavdil shuls and whatnot generally are tax exempt. So it was similarly over there. People who worked for them also were also potter from taxes. So therefore, a person is entitled to say, I am a servant of the fire worshippers, and therefore I'm potter, avda denurana, lo yehivna akarga, and therefore I'm not going to pay the tax. In other words, if he can get away with it by being a Talmid Chacham that we said before, then good. But if he can't, if for whatever reason they're not going to exempt him on those grounds, then instead he can use this method. The point is that Ran says it's not considered as though he's believing in Avodah Zarah, because it's very clear that he's saying it only in order to evade the taxes. Now, why do we mention specifically a Talmid Chacham saying this? So the Ran says it means it doesn't mean only a Talmid Chacham. It means even a Talmid Chacham A regular person is for sure allowed to do it, but even a Talmid Chacham, you might think that it means that it's going to make a Chilul Hashem. It's going to look like he's admitting to and he believes in Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, that's fine, because really, what does he mean? What does he mean when he says, I'm a slave to the fire? He really is referring to Hashem. Ki Hashem alekecha eish oichlohu. Hashem is compared to a fire, so therefore, that's really what he means. The Rashba points out, in other words, the Rashba actually has a tshuva on this. So the Rashba has a tshuva, basically a part of what he points out over there is, he can say that, he means that he has in mind Hashem. The fact that they're going to misunderstand and think that it means their fire temples, that's not our problem. By the way, I forgot to mention, the Rashba also mentions earlier, when we were talking about this point, that a Talmid Chacham is allowed to introduce himself as a Talmid Chacham when people don't know him. The Rashba points out another reason is because, after all, you have a mitzvah to have respect for Talmid Chachamim, and if they don't have the proper respect for him, then they're going to be held guilty by Hashem. So that, in fact, the Rashba says, for that reason, why is the Gemara even saying he's allowed to? We should say he has to inform them he's a Talmid Chacham, so that they give him the proper covenant and aren't punishable. But anyway, in the continuation of the Tshuva, he mentions this piece of Gemara over here, and he says, that's the point. In other words, you're allowed to say something which they can take in a different way, and that's not your problem because you have the proper intention in mind.
This fire here, is it talking about the same fire as the Torah?
Yeah, it's a similar kind of thing, I guess. But yeah, here he's talking about, here we're not talking about the fire of Torah, we're talking about the fire of Hashem. Reminds me, by the way, so there is Bechlal, by the way, there is a din, a Yid is not allowed to go and openly deny that he's a Yid, but he is allowed to say something that can be misunderstood to mean that. I once came across an example of that. For example, in Germany in the 1930s, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, would stop people in the street and ask them, are you a Jew? And if yeah, you can imagine what they do to them. So Rabbanim of that time said, you can answer them, kein Jude. In German, that means not a Jew. But you're having in mind that the Kain is like Cain in Lashon Kodesh. Yes, Jew. So therefore, you're saying, yes, I'm a Jew, but you're saying it in a way where they're going to think that it means that you're not. Such a thing would be allowed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
I thought if it's possible, people shouldn't even, like, try to be, like, hiding lies.
You shouldn't, but in cases like this, then you're allowed to. So continues the Gemara, my time of Avruchi, Ayumine, Kamar, because basically he's just trying to like get a lion away from him. He has like this, they're gonna charge him taxes that he shouldn't have to pay, and therefore he's entitled to say this seemingly misleading thing in order to get them off his back.
You don't want to mislead people.
Generally you're not, but here we're saying this is an exception to the rule. So now, speaking of this matter of the Goyim worshipping fire, and this whole matter, the Gemara brings incidentally something else in this connection. Rav Ashi Havaleahu Abba. Rav Ashi owned a forest. Zabne Lebe Nura, he sold the forest to a temple of Avodah Zarah. So there again, they're going to be using the wood to light the fire and use it in their rituals. So Rav Ben asked him, how could you do that? Goyim are also to worship Avodah Zarah as well. How can you make it possible for them to do that? Now, strictly speaking, the Gemara does talk about Masechta Avodah Zarah. It's not really the actual issue of Lifnei Iver unless it's impossible for them to get it any other way. The expression the Gemara uses over there is Tchei Evrei Nara. Imagine, for example, you have the classic example in the Gemara over there is, let's say you have a Nazir on one side of the river and you're across the river from him and you have wine with you. If you were to take a long pole and hand him wine across the river where otherwise he couldn't get it, that would be Lifnei Iver because he has no way of getting it otherwise. On the other hand, if it's Chad Evrei the Nara, as the Gemara calls it over there, if you're both on the same side, and he himself could easily pick up the wine, then it's not really Lifnei Iver. So here, it's not like the Goyim couldn't get wood for their temples from anywhere else other than Rav Ashi's forest. So maybe it wouldn't be the technical Lifnei Iver, but still Ravina is arguing that at least it's also Dirabanan. Omalei, so Rav Ashi tells him, not a problem because Roiv Eitzim La'Sokha Nitnu, wood in general is meant for burning in a fire, meaning not necessarily a fire for Avodah Zarah, but rather fires just because people need to cook and they need to keep warm and whatever, and therefore that's mutter. So you have, in halacha like that, you have, so therefore, in other words, you can assume that they're buying it for a dvar heter, for something that's mutter, rather than for something that's aser, and therefore there's no issue of Lifnei Iver with that. That comes up, the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah, various other examples of that as well, where in the general rule being, the Rosh mentions over here, for example, there are things you would not be allowed to sell to the Goyim, where it's clear that they're buying it for their religious rituals, for Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, when you have something where they could be buying it for that, but they could equally we all be buying it for some other legitimate purpose, then you're allowed to, and that's an example of what Rav Ashi did over here by selling them his forest.
I think that you're also not for example, sell weapons to unknown world.
The rules sell weapons to them is another matter that's also mentioned in Abu Dazara. Very good. Yeah. So there's rules about that, but one of the rules, one of the general principles in that is it depends whether the thing is most likely going to be used for something that is usur versus where it's not. To take examples from Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, for example. So let's say, for example, it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, let's say, for example, to sell them wax. So wax they may use for candles that they use in their rituals. But on the other hand, there can be all kinds of other things they can do wax, they can use wax for as well. So it's not so bad, you would be allowed to sell it to them. But then the Gemara mentions over there, the Mishnah, the Gemara mentioned various things that specifically they use for their rituals. So then for their Avodah Zarah rituals, so then those kinds of things, you're not allowed to sell them. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'olach of Tes Shvat. So before the Chetei Tadas, we know that Adam and Chava and the whole world was on a very perfect and very high level. So the Rebbe talks about that the Moed HaMashiach then will complete our avodah, will have completely separated the good from the bad, therefore will reach the level of Shlemos that there was before the Chetei Tadas. The whole point is, the Chetei Tadas, before that, good and evil were very clearly distinct and separate. The Chetei Tadas caused them to be mixed together. That's one of the meanings of Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, is now they learned that good contains evil and evil contains good. So the Moed HaMashiach, all of that will be fixed up, and the Tov will be completely good. And the Ra will have been completely sifted out. Okay, continuing on halachas of Eid of Chatzeres. We were talking about yesterday, by the way, I was mentioning about a case where people are staying in a hotel. Rabbi Elzeva pointed out, actually, that there are poskim who say, in particular, Rabbi Moshe writes about this in one of his Truvas, that if you're staying in a hotel, you actually may not need to make an Eid of Chatzeres at all, on the grounds that because the hotel owner has furniture and appliances in the room which you can't remove. So therefore, that's considered tfisas yad, and therefore there's an argument to be made that's considered as though he's living in the room, and therefore you might not need an eid of chatzeres. So not all the poskim agree to that, though. In particular, the Dvar Avraham disagrees with that. So the Maisa, I think they say make an eid of chatzeres, but don't make a bracha on it. But there may be cases where you taka don't have to at all. And like we talked about yesterday, if everybody's eating together, like at a Pesach program or whatever, then for sure you don't need to.
There's a
block
on
Eretz Yisrael. Yes, there is. I'll mitzvah save. Okay. So now let's talk about, in this connection, you have, let's say, two apartments within one room. So you have, let's say, two exactly like that, like in a building, two apartments on one floor, and they have a shared hallway. So again, the hallway is their chutzner. They wouldn't be allowed to carry out from their apartments to the hallway unless they make an eruv. And for that matter, even if you have one single apartment where two separate people are living, and again, like we talked about, you may have that one of them, the only way of getting in and out of it is through the other one, then still, you wouldn't even be able to carry from one room to another unless they make an Eid of Chatzeres between them. If both of them belong to one person, then you have this matter of Tfisas Yad. So you have, for example, let's say, so you take part of your apartment and you sublet it to somebody else, then you have Tfisas Yad. You have items, you have furniture and whatever in there that belong to you, and then Taka, you wouldn't need to make an Eid of because of that matter of Tfisas Yad. And again, according to Rav Moshe, that does apply to hotel rooms as well for the same reason. But other than that, if you have those, No, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's what we're saying over here. You have, for example, let's say a hallway. An inside hallway would also be considered a shared area. The basic idea is anytime you have a shared area where two or more individual families or two or more individual people who don't have a connection between them as far as their food are using it jointly, then you need an Eid of Chatzeres for there. So it would include hallways, it would include stairwells, it would include front and backyards, all that kind of thing. So you need an Eid of Chatzeres with the exceptions of these kinds of things we're talking about where everybody eats together or where there's Tfisas Yad or certain other kinds of exceptions. So practically speaking, anytime you live here in Crown Heights, you have upstairs or downstairs neighbors. You have neighbors that you share a driveway or an alleyway or whatever with. Make an Eid of Chatzeres with them. Make sure it's also, if it's an alleyway or a driveway, it also has to be enclosed with Surah Pesach and whatever, so you can carry there. But you also have to have an Eid of Chatzeres. Practically speaking, as we'll learn next time, Be'ez Hashem, you make the Eid of Chatzeres generally at the one time a year. You make it usually before Pesach, and you use matzah and you keep it for all year round. But yeah, you have to have one in order to be able to carry there. What? Do you have to eat it? I mean, eventually it has to be edible, but I don't know. I myself, what I do with my own Erev Chatzeres matzah is every year when I replace it Erev Pesach, then I use it for my matzahs during Pesach. But I use the old box for some of this year's matzahs during Pesach, and then I have other matzahs that I set aside for the next year. Yeah. Okay.